your room is as clean as your mind, with no defilements, because otherwise I know when you're leaving for the airport, and I know many people in the airport, so I can blacklist you. So if you're checking in through immigration and you get pulled outside, that means I've told them you haven't cleaned your room and you're not allowed to leave Australia until you come back. So now, please look after the place. It is all voluntary, and if you haven't already, you've seen me working here as well. So it's not just Dania that I will also help out if necessary. So it's the monks work here, the lay people work here, you work here. So it's our place, so we'll look after it together. Very good. And so I hope you enjoyed the Dhamma talk this afternoon from Ajahn Pamali. Now you have another one. So three talks a day. That's called brainwashing. In any sort of cult, we have lots of talks every day. But the talk today is learning how to let go, apparently, because I was asked to do letting go talk today. And you've already let go a lot just to come here. You've let go of lots and lots of donations, and I've just seen how many donations have come through over the time here, so that's very wonderful. That's one way of letting go. And as you all know, that in monasteries, we don't have donation boxes. What do we have? Letting go boxes, yes. So you can just let go of things. But what it is really just realizing that it's not just for me, it's always for us. So it's about sharing. Because a lot of times letting go is, or the opposite of letting go, is trying to collect things just for me, and what I want, what I need, instead of having a much wider mind and thinking what the person next to me needs, what the people around me need, what our community needs, what our society, what our world needs. To be able to do that, we have to let go of this little thing about ourselves and just thinking that we are the most important person in the world. And of course, that's not true. There's an old story which I keep on telling you about. Remember the Emperor's Three Questions? That story from Leo Tolstoy of when the emperor wanted to find a new religion for himself because he was fed up with all the organized religions. And he decided all he really needed to do to have a philosophy of life is the answer to three core questions. This is an opening the door of your heart, but it's a beautiful story. And he decided the three questions he needed answers for were, number one, when is the most important time? Number two, who is the most important person? And number three, what is the most important thing to do? Eventually, he found the answers to those questions. When is the most important time? Very good. So when's the most important time to clean your toilet? Nah, that's why it never gets cleaned. So now is the most important time. So if you're going to do something good in life, do it now. Look, because my brother's here, I get all these memories of my father and, and our life together. You know, Tony, that one of the things that I remember his funeral service, and I told many other people about this, and his cremation at Mortlake Cemetery. And I remember the one thing which I remember from that service, especially afterwards, that time, that day, and afterwards, the feeling that there was a fellow that you really cared for and loved, but you never really expressed, to his face how much you loved him and respected him. Simply because you were a 16-year-old boy at that time, it's not what a 16-year-old boy, a teenager, is expected to do. And so instead of actually following my heart, I was following what, I was expected to do. And afterwards, I always regretted that. I regretted expressing to someone who had a great influence in your life just how much you cared for him. And of course, after he died, that opportunity was gone. And it's because of experiences like that, I always make sure that, if you do care for someone, if you are grateful for someone, tell them about it right now. And don't even wait till after the talk. Do it right now, because who knows what might happen. And you know that your life is full of many missed opportunities. Where instead of grabbing the moment, we just let it pass. I will do it later, I'll do it another time. And the opportunity never comes back again. And that's really sad. It's because we don't give enough importance, you know, to what's happening right now. So the reason I brought up this story is, first of all, you know, we really should let go a lot of the past and a lot of our fear of the future. Because that stops us valuing this moment, which is the only time we can say how much we care for one another and how much gratitude we have for one another. And this moment is just so valuable. And a lot of our life, we miss those opportunities. And we regret them afterwards. Even the opportunity to say sorry. I'm sorry for what I did. You know, sorry for that time, Tony, when I hit your head and gave you a black eye. As a kid. I did that once. We were fighting as kids do. But to be able to say sorry is a beautiful thing to do, because who knows, you might not have that opportunity again. You know, tomorrow some of you are leaving, going off to Dhammasara Nuns Monastery. You're flying off to other countries. Now, when will we ever come back again? You know, I have all my plans of, you know, coming again to Singapore or to the BGF or to wherever, but who knows? So when we understand, just let go of the past, let go of the future, so the present moment can be really, really important. And that helps so much. But in particular, you know, to let go of the past, there's just so many people, they just cultivate these memories from the past, which just gives them so much trouble and pain and difficulty. Now, you've heard many of my stories, but this is one of the only opportunities I've had for 60 years to give some good advice to my big brother. And so this is one of those stories which is one of the stories which has been really, really effective. And one of the reasons it's in my mind is because, again, next weekend I'm going to this psychology conference over in Sydney. And the first time I went to this conference, I told this story. These were all psychologists, therapists, counselors. And as soon as I told this story, I saw all the heads go down and they were scribbling out this story. And many of them have told me that there's about three or four stories which they use every day in their practice. And this is one of them. It's a very simple story, but it's a funny story, and it shows why you should let go of the past. For those of you who have heard me speak before, you may have heard me say this many, many times. It's the old story of the two chicken farmers. So, Tony, once upon a time, there were two chicken farmers. And if you've heard this one? You remember it? Probably did. Yeah, that. Okay, very good. He's a very kind brother. That was very good. That was when I went over to London, East London, in Docklands, to give a talk at a HR conference. And I always remember that because it was a big HR conference, and I was giving a speech there, and you know, human resources conference, and I was waiting there just maybe half an hour before my talk, and the organizer came up, just got a call from reception. There's someone trying to get in who says they're your brother. And of course they're used to this, you know, saying that I know the band or I know this person. Can you please come and check them out to see if they're for real? Because, no, Tony never told me he was coming. Just like this time. But still, I knew he was coming. But anyhow, so I went down there, and there was Tony with his daughter, you know, my niece. They're trying to get in for free. And the reason was, and how much were they charging to get in for my talk? Only 30. That is more than that. It's about £200. Yeah, and in. And actually, it was actually much more than £50. It was about £200 or something. Yeah, because that was when I really found out my market value. Because, you know, you guys always come for free, but when it's actually, you know, in a big conference, actually you find out how much you're worth. So I always remember that. I said, yeah, I know this fellow. And they said, you only allowed one person in. So I said, oh, come on, I'm doing this all for free. You can let my brother. And so they let you both in. So I always remember that. But anyway, back to the story. And the story is the two chicken farmers. One chicken farmer got up early in the morning, went into the chicken shed to collect the produce of the night before. So he went into the shed with a basket. And he went into the shed with a basket and filled the basket up with chicken shit. And he left the eggs in the shed to rot. And he brought the shit back into the house with him. It stank the whole house out. And his other relations were very upset at him. He was a very stupid chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two took the basket into the shed and filled it up with eggs. And left the shit in the shed to rot, where it would become valuable fertilizer later on. And he brought the eggs back into the house so he could make a nice omelette for his family's breakfast and sell the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That was a smart chicken farmer. And the moral of that story is, when each one of you, think about it, when you collect the produce of your life so far, when you go back into the past, what do you put in your basket and bring back into the present with you? Are you shit collectors or egg collectors? And that makes it very clear, most people are shit collectors. A few eggs, but there's much more shit than the eggs. What your husband, what your ex said to you. You know, what the police said to you when they caught you for speeding. All the bad things which happened. Those are the things which we remember, isn't it? Now, what your family members did to you in the past. Instead of all the good memories. And it's amazing how many people collect the shit of the past. Now, what that country did to my country during the Second World War. Now, what so the government did to me. What my partner did to me. What my girlfriend did to me because she dumped me. What somebody did to me. How many of you just remember all the bad things which happened to you? And sometimes that's all we remember. And all the good times we've had together, we just forget. You know, that is the reason why people get divorced. They're shit collectors. They remember what happened between them, which was unpleasant. And all the wonderful, beautiful, lovely times they've had together, they just forget. And you can see that if you become a shit collector, the next thing you want to do is have revenge. Get your own back. They've hurt me. They cheated me. They've given me such a hard time. I need to teach them a lesson. Sometimes, yes, you may have been abused. You may have been treated really violently. But why collect that shit? Now, this is no small thing, because I taught this to survivors of torture and trauma. These are people who come to countries like Australia, you know, from some of these places where you are taken away in the middle of the night to some underground cell and tortured. And when you hear some of the tales these people say, it makes your skin crawl. What human beings can do to each other is just beyond my comprehension. But people have been there and they've been through that. They've survived. And they've got what's called post-traumatic stress. They're going through huge trauma. How do they let that go? Stop collecting the shit. Collect the happy memories instead. Collect the eggs and let the shit go. Sometimes people think that's impossible. It can be done. It has to be done. There's no other way. And just to tell people that possibility, first of all, it can be done. It can be done. It can be done. No matter what's happened to you, the worst torture, trauma in the whole world, you can let it go. And I've seen people who have let it go moved on, and now they're free. The torture and trauma of your life is a prison cell. The door is always open. You can walk out at any time. The thing is, we don't want to walk out. Or we don't think we're allowed to walk out. We feel there's something wrong with walking out. We feel we must keep that shit, that pain, those incredibly bad memories. Once you tell people where the door is and say you can walk out, why not? Do you want to be in jail, in the prison of your past pain, or do you really want to be free? You have that choice. Take that journey out of the past. Let it go. One of the problems with our Western world is that we always seek revenge. We think that justice is only served when there's an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Someone has hurt me, they have to be hurt back. And of course, I've been around long enough serving in prisons to see that that just does not work. You punish somebody for no matter what crime they did. Maybe you may feel that they got what they deserved. No, they didn't get what they deserved. That's just going to make another angry person in the future. And is that really what you want? To see someone else suffer? You've suffered already for what they did to you. Do you want to see more suffering? And it's interesting that you to speak to some victims of crime. People who have suffered. And many of them are wise enough to say, look, there's enough pain already. I don't want retribution. We don't want to see this cycle of violence, of tit for tat, keep on going on. We've all lived in our world long enough to see what happens when there is that sort of retribution, when there's violence and counter-violence. It's not a nice world to live in. Singapore is a pretty safe country. Even Malaysia is a really good country. Australia is very good. But you go to some parts of Africa, whether it's in Somalia, Afghanistan and Iraq, and you think, where will there ever be an end to all of this? There can only be an end to all of this when elbow sides let go of the shit. We don't carry it around and say, they hurt me, they killed my child, they raped my daughter. If you keep carrying that around, the cycle of violence never stops. You have to let it go. It's the only thing you can do. And how you let that go is realizing not only is it the only way to freedom, to let go of the pain of the past, but also to recognize the eggs as well. There are eggs in that shed as well. That all those people who have done those terrible things, they're not bad people. The story is that I've been in prisons a lot. Many of you may have seen that man in green today, who was also putting rice in your bowl, who was serving and helping clean up after the lunch, Robert. He's a prisoner, a sex offender. I don't think you mind me telling you. The last time the Singapore group came here, at October, all your food was cooked by Carl. He's also a prisoner who lives up the road. Again, sex offender. You were served food by him. A nice guy. A person you could respect. I say those things because he's not a sex offender. There is no such thing as a rapist. There's no such thing as a thief. There's no such thing as a murderer. What is there? A person who's offended. A person who's murdered. A person who's raped. And that's much different than a rapist. If you call a person a thief, what you're saying is that's all there is to them. They're just a thief. They're a criminal. And you're totally ignorant, willfully in denial to all the other parts of their character. So much in denial that they're just shit and you want to destroy them, to punish them, to hurt them. But if you see that they're much bigger than whatever bad thing they did, they're much bigger than that. And that's why I say that, because sometimes you see these things as a person sitting next to you or standing next to you putting food in amongst bowls. And if you knew what they did, the act which they did, you think, he did that? It's almost incomprehensible, because there's much more to them. They made a big mistake. They lost it. Drugs, alcohol, who knows? But this is what happens. And that could have been you. So don't just think that that person is bad or evil. See the big picture, that a person has done a bad thing, but they're not a bad person. When you know that difference, it's very easy to let go of the pain of the past. Simply because whoever did whatever they did to you is not a bad person. Sometimes that's hard to get your head around. For many, many years, you've always been blaming them for what they did. The cruelty, the hurt, the harm they did. And you've judged them to be a criminal, a bad person, a selfish person, a cruel person. That is the mistake. That stops us letting go of the past. We've judged them as a bad person. Be fair. Be reasonable. Be wise. If a person has done a bad thing, they're not a bad person. That means you can let go of the demand for retribution. They don't need to be punished. When you can do that, you're stepping on the path to letting go of the past. When you don't need to get your own back. When you don't need for revenge. Once that happens, you see this great sense of freedom. This person hurt me, but they're not a bad person. It means you can forgive them, let it go. But if you still think they're a bad person and they need to be taught a lesson, you'll never let it go. Until you've got, as I said in Shakespeare, your pound of flesh. What type of world do you want to live in? What type of mind do you want? You don't have to have this mind of anger and revenge. This is how we let it go. And instead, by looking at their good parts, the kind people, gentle people, who've done a one bad thing or two or ten bad things, I don't know, but they've done many more million good things. What was it in, University Science? The north of Malaysia. Many, many years ago, there was a question after my talk, and it's a great question. I repeat it very often. At the end of my talk, any questions, this lady put her hand up, and she said, I want to ask a question. I just found out this morning my husband lied to me. Should I get divorced? I can't trust a man anymore. And that was the question. And of course, the reason I repeat this, because for once I gave a really good answer. And first of all, I asked for more information. What do you do at the university? She says, I'm a lecturer in maths. How long have you been married? 3 years, she said. So knowing that she was a lecturer in maths, and of course I did maths at university, I said, right, we'll do statistics together. 3 years is about 1,000 days. And let's assume, and this is a valid assumption, it's reasonable, that over the 3 years you've been married, your husband has said 20 things to you, on average every day, which could be right, which could be wrong. So since you've been married, he's said 20,000 statements, and now he's lied for the first time. According to probability theory, that means the next time he opens his mouth, there's a 20,000 to 1 chance he's telling the truth. What do you mean he can't be trusted? 20,000 to 1 is pretty good odds, isn't it? So the reason I said that was an example. One lie, does that mean we can't trust someone? One lie, does that make them a liar? It does if we ignore the 19,999 times they've told the truth. And that's a problem with human beings. We focus on the faults, we focus on the shit, we collect only one part, and it's usually the negative part, and we ignore everything else. And that's why we judge a person. They're a liar. I'm going to get divorced. I'm going to throw them away. What a waste that is. So when we focus, not just on the shit, but on the eggs, come on, focus on the eggs. Have you ever noticed the chicken eggs are much bigger than chicken shit? But all we see is the shit, because it smells more. So that way, we can learn how to let go of our past. And many people, they go to actually these psychologists and these therapists, and they pay a huge amount of money to try and let go of the pain of their past. They've had some trauma, they've had some bad experience, they've been in a car crash, you know, they've been shot at when they've been in the army, or whatever it is. They're traumatized. And they go to these expensive therapists to try and get rid of their problems. You don't need to do that. Come to Jhana Grove. It's free. And you have a good time, and you get let go of all your problems as well. And actually, it is true. This is why that many of those psychologists, they come here, and they use these stories in their practice. The only difference between hearing it here and hearing it to psychologist, whatever it's psychologist rooms, is the fee. It's the money you have to waste. But I understand you can let go of the past, especially the pain of the past. How freeing is that? If you are going to carry anything from the past, carry the happiness. Carry the joy. Carry the wonderful times you've had together. When a person does die, why is it we just carry that painful experience of the death? And we feel so much grief, and we totally forget all the wonderful, happy times we've had together. All the eggs of the past of our life together, we forget, we ignore. And instead we just carry this terrible sickness and eventual death which killed the person we love. If we focus on the whole life, especially the beautiful times we've had together, we're an egg collector. Which means at a funeral service you can really celebrate the life of someone who's passed away. Because the eggs are much bigger than the shit. When you do that, you go to a funeral service, and it may be of your child, it may be of the person you've spent most of your life with, a father or mother, and you never feel sad. You only feel sad and grief if you're the shit collector. So, letting go of the past doesn't mean letting go of everything. Keep the happy memories, keep the joy, keep the wonderful things which you have done in your life. Celebrate them. Value them, cherish them, keep them. And the other stuff, you let go of. That's called letting go. It doesn't mean letting go of everything. Keep the good stuff. The shit, let go. And if anyone has any difficulty doing that, what I tell people, a practical exercise to be able to let it go, is write down all of the pain you've experienced in your life, especially the big stuff, on a piece of paper. What someone did to you, how they abused you, how you cheated you, how they looked at you unfairly. Write it down, because one of the first things of actually getting rid of this stuff is acknowledging it, first of all. Bringing it up, not hiding it. Write it down on a piece of paper so you can see it. The worst thing which ever happened to you so far in your life. And the best piece of paper to use, as I've said before, is toilet paper. Put it on some toilet paper, and once you've written it all down, read it all. Okay, read it all. This is shit. Wajahn Brahm said, that chicken shit. And where does it belong? In the toilet. Put it in the toilet, press the button, and say goodbye to all the pain of the past. Why do you keep it? So, doing little ceremonies like that, it's called the toilet ceremony. It's one of the most important parts of ceremonies in Buddhism. I know that Angie doesn't like ceremonies and rituals, but that's one ritual which actually works. So do the toilet ritual when you go back to Singapore. The Jhana Grove is fine. Yeah, don't take it back. But tell all the other BF members are not here. Today we're doing a Buddhist ritual. And get them to write all the pain of their past on toilet paper. We've got heaps of toilet paper here. We've got, Daniel, how much toilet paper have you got in this joint? Tons, yeah. I don't know why people keep giving us toilet paper. Maybe it's because they see all the food which we eat. And so, in proportion to the food they offer, they have to put the toilet paper in proportion. But anyhow, you can take some back if you want, in your baggage. It's great, actually, to declare it at customs. What are you bringing in to Singapore? Now, anyway, back to being serious. That's letting go of the past. Now, letting go of the future. And that's a wonderful thing to let go of, because how much stress do you have and having to worry about what you have to do in the future? And look, I really try hard not to look at my schedule. Only today I had to ring up Ajahn Sujata to find out what I'm doing next weekend when I go to Sydney. There's a big conference over there. Most people have got their speeches already written. They've got their PowerPoints already prepared. And you know me, I have no PowerPoints. And also, because I just make it up as I go along. No preparation. And part of that is the whole attitude of not worrying about the future. Now, if I worried about the future, look, I've been, you know how busy I was. I was really tired last night. And too tired actually to go to sleep. I laid down and meditated until about 10 o'clock. But, you know, physically sort of exhausted. And now today I've been pretty busy. And so when I heard that you wanted to talk this morning, oh, God, give a talk this morning. But forget about it. Just go and just teach some meditation. And another talk this evening. Oh, forget about it. Just do it. And when you just don't plan anything, you just allow it to happen. Now, that's one of the secrets why you can engage with people. That's one of the secrets of public speaking. Number one, don't plan the future. And just let it flow. Because when it flows, you're engaging with people. And you've not got some sort of plan, you know, of what you're going to say. Just let it roll. Let it happen. And because I'm not worried about the future, I'm never worried about whether people like my talk or not. Because, you know, I always figured out it's win-win situation. Whichever way it goes. If people like my talk, it's wonderful. I inspire people and people are happy. That makes me feel good. But if you're very bored with my talk and think it's a terrible talk, then you go outside and leave me alone so I can have some rest. So, now either way, I win. So that way I'm not worried. You know, it's a win-win situation, so I'm not worried about whatever happens. But I've seen so many people are just paranoid about the future and what might happen. When we gave that retreat in Phuket in June, you know, in that nice hotel, that's when, I think it was Dira Yupa, she told me she just got an SMS that some very reputable sources had predicted there would be a tsunami that weekend. They said that. And they said, look, this is actually typical of human beings. Number one, why do they make those predictions anyway? And why do so many people believe it? The reason is because we are addicted to worry. We like worrying about things. And it's so hard for us to let go of fear. So it's an addiction which you have. So you come to this place and you get rid of your addiction to worrying about the future. Well, if there is a tsunami, we all die anyway, so let's enjoy ourselves before it happens. But if you worry about it, number one, you lose all your happiness, you worry, you can't sleep at night. And when it doesn't happen, so what a fool you are. You know, wasting all those days worrying, afraid about something which never happened. And isn't there something wrong in that? Okay, it may not be the tsunami, it may be the stock market. It may be your relationship, it may be the biopsy, you know, which the results haven't come through yet. How many of you are just so afraid of the future? And the worst thing about fear is fear itself, as everybody keeps on saying. And it's the fear which kills people. You know, Tony, that remember years ago I used to go, my mother used to love horror movies. So, you know, she used to go to the horror movies and she'd always ask, you know, myself or yourself to go along, you know, to make sure that someone to hold her hand when he got scared. I remember that. She loved horror movies. So you used to go to see these Edgar Allan Poe movies. Edgar Allan Poe, you know, the pit and the pendulum, this big pendulum going lower and lower and lower. And the one I remember, it was The Mask of the Red Death. That was one of his movies and short stories. But I remember at college reading the real story, the little novel which he wrote where that story was in. And in The Mask of the Red Death, it was set in medieval Europe, when all these plagues, like the Black Death, bubonic plague, would actually kill, you know, was it about 30, 40, 50% of the population in some places? I mean, that was really a big pandemic. Now, SARS had nothing like these big plagues in Europe. It really was dangerous. And in this little short story, you know, because this was Christian and people were very superstitious at that time, they had these like these demons from hell. And they had a little conference in a forest somewhere in Europe. And these were the beings, the demons, the little devils who were spreading this plague, the real cause of the plague. Because they always thought it was some supernatural malevolence who was causing this terrible sickness which was killing so many people. And they all met together and they had this sort of the devil from who'd been to Paris. He said, I killed, you know, 20,000 people, because the population wasn't that great. That was about, you know, half the population or something. And the one from Berlin, no, from Cologne. That's right, Daniel's from Cologne. The one from Cologne said, I killed 30,000 people. And the one from London said, I killed 40,000 people. You know, and the one who'd been, say, to Geneva. Oh, he's not here today, Bodhidacha. The one from Geneva said, I only killed 20, but fear killed 50,000. I always remember that saying. And because that, to me, was just so wise. In his big plagues, he'd only killed 10, but the fear had killed 50,000. And I thought, wow, that author had understood something very profound. In any pandemic, whether it's SARS, whether it's bird flu, or whatever other flu comes up next, I think the next pandemic will be kangaroo flu. I don't know, but whatever. Fear kills more people than anything else on this planet. If you understand that, you understand how this worrying about the future is something which will actually is bad for your health, gives you stress, and stops you enjoying life. So to let go of that fear of the future is one of the stories. I tried to put this in Opening the Door of Your Heart, because this actually came from that great philosopher. I don't know if any of you studied philosophy. So this was a great philosopher, an English philosopher. He lived maybe about 80 years ago. But he's actually he's immortalized these days. Everyone knows him. He's called Winnie the Pooh, the great philosopher. And unfortunately, actually, Walt Disney took over the rights of Winnie the Pooh. So this story, the publisher wanted to actually to publish this, but had to get the rights from, it was only a short story, from, was it, I think, yeah, from Walt Disney. And of course, Walt Disney just won't give the rights to anything at all, even just a short story for a little book like I was writing. Absolute refusal. The publisher said, look, these people don't give the rights to anybody. So anyway, I couldn't put that story in the book. But that was a story where Winnie the Pooh, if you know the character, you know, this really fat bear, that's why I like him so much, because fat and wise. And he had this little friend called Piglet, if you remember the stories. And people who are very small like that are usually very fearful for obvious reasons. You know, a small stature, they find it very difficult to defend themselves. They're not big and strong. So Piglet was, you know, Pooh's best friend, but was very, very paranoid. And so one day they were walking back from Rabbit's house, you know, where they just had a little something. And as they were walking back through the forest, they were still a long way from home when a storm came. And the storm was very violent. And you know, we've had many storms here in Australia. You may have had storms in the countries where you've come from. And they actually kill people. There's landslides, there's trees come crashing down to the ground. And it's very scary to walk through a forest during a storm. And of course, little Piglet was holding Pooh's paw harder and harder and harder. He was getting more frightened. Until he gets so afraid, because, you know, he heard trees coming down. And he stopped, he couldn't go on. And he looked at Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, and said, I can't go on. I'm so afraid. What would happen if a tree fell when we were underneath it? And of course, that was a possibility. You know, he wasn't just, you know, imagining things. Trees were falling. what would happen if a tree fell where we were underneath it? And for just 1 second, Winnie the Pooh was afraid too, because it was a reasonable statement. But then his great philosophical wisdom came up, and he replied in this immortal to me phrase, "What would happen if a tree didn't fall when we were underneath it?" And that took away Piglet's fear, and they carried on walking. You know, a lot of fear of the future, what happens if I get cancer, is answered by what happens if I didn't. You know, how many people get cancer? Does that make you afraid? You know, more people don't get cancer. So why are you afraid? The odds are on your side. So we're really being a bit ridiculous in the way we use our mind. Instead of what would happen if, and something negative, that's the cause of fear. And the answer is, what would happen if it didn't? And then there's no fear. What would happen if you miss your flight tomorrow or the day after? Does that make you anxious and want to look at the clock and try and get to the airport quicker? And I see some people get to the airport 3 hours before the flight. Why? Fear. And they have to suffer being bored to death in an airport. He pointed to people. So he said, what happens if you get caught in the traffic? What happens if you didn't get caught in the traffic? Think about that, which is much more likely. We don't have traffic jams in Perth. Very rare. And this is a small airport. This is not LAX. Now, this is not Heathrow. You know, you don't have to go through such security. You know, being in Heathrow, you have to sometimes queue in these long queues before you get to security. You know, in Perth, you just get in there. It's very quick. So, you know, half an hour before the flight leaves. I've seen people are really smart. They get there really late. They just waltz in and they get on the flight. So, look, 2 hours before the flight. That's ridiculous. 1 hour is plenty of time in Perth. Fear, 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 fear. You try it. Okay, look, when you get to the airport... Yeah. No, it does not. Look, I remember just going to Bangkok airport once. I was changing the flight, even SQ. It was actually the airport counter, 45 minutes, I think, was before. 40 minutes. 40 minutes, yeah. Now it's plenty of time. 40 minutes, yeah. So there you go. She used to be a VP for Singapore Airlines. 40 minutes is plenty of time. It's Australia. Yeah, she'll be right, mate. You'll be okay. So you'll be okay. Sorry? Exactly. What would happen if you miss your flight? You have more time here. Wow, wonderful. And I think the last time I told that story, I think recently, I remember probably in Singapore, there was one of the people who came here once. And I collected these amazing stories. It was many years ago. He was a businessman, I think he was English, who was working in India, and finished his business, was getting a flight back to UK from Bombay Airport. It was Bombay then, not Mumbai. And so he ordered a taxi from his hotel. The taxi turned up on time, but the taxi driver got lost. You know, that does happen. You know, sometimes these taxi drivers, you know, not the sharpest knives in the closet, and they're sort of in the drawer, I think it was called. They're not sort of the best people. And sometimes they're just getting cheap jobs. And so he got lost in the streets of Bombay. And, you know, the businessman didn't know his way around. And as he was trying to find his way to the airport, the minutes were ticking past. And this guy was getting more and more afraid he'd miss his flight. And, you know, it really was late. But, you know, in India, many flights were delayed. You know, because it's, you know, the bureaucracy, the way they organize things there. So he had a very good chance. He thought, if my flight's delayed, I'll be able to make it. But for once, that flight took off on time. Because he saw it. They finally made it to the airport. And as he was approaching, he saw his flight take off. You know, you could see the markings on the tower. I forget what airline it was. And he was so angry and upset at the taxi driver. Now, you'd expect, if you order a taxi, at least the taxi driver knows the way to the airport. The stupid idiot of a taxi driver made him lose his flight. But as he watched the plane take off, then he watched it come down. It crashed. And everybody on board was killed. Thank you, taxi driver. Have a tip. Oh, you're my best friend. His whole attitude changed. And he told me that was one of those experiences which changed his whole life. It was a true story. And of course, he missed the flight. And he was so angry. And he didn't realize it saved his life. So that's why. No need to be afraid of things. If you catch a flight, who knows what happens? If you miss it, who knows what happens? But that gives us a sense we're not so afraid of what happens in life. We just work with it. Let it happen. And how much peace does that give in your mind when you're not afraid of the future? You just let it evolve. You can always do something with whatever happens. And all that time you worry and make plans. Plan A, plan B, all the way to plan Z. And then plan Z1, Z2, Z3, Z4. And how much do you sort of create so much difficulty for yourself? And look, all the plans you've ever made, how many of them were ever actually enacted? How many were ever relevant in your life? So many of the plans, yeah, you've got to make some plans, but about 1% of all the plans I ever made actually were worth anything. 99% weren't. So I've got to be more efficient these days. I've got so many things to do, so many duties, so much work to do that I can't afford to make plans. I've got no time for plans. Instead, you just allow things to evolve. Make a few plans, but hardly any, and just see what happens. That's why I like going to Malaysia and to Singapore and to other countries, because I'm not in control anymore. And I just say, Angie, just what am I doing today? So say, this is the time you get up, so I get up. This is the time you eat, so I eat. This is the time you go and give a talk, so I give a talk. This is the time I've got to see someone who's sick with Jerry, so I go and see someone who's sick. And I love that because I don't make any plan. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing that day. And it just goes to pass very happily and peacefully. So I've got no worries. And that's the same in the BGF. You say, now you go to Dana, so I go to Dana. Now you eat. Now you go up and have a rest. So I go have a rest. Now they've got me. I've got a counseling to do, so I do some counseling. So no plans, and it's just wonderful. So that's the things I like. That's when I'm here, I'm supposed to be the boss. But my birthday was brilliant because it was a secret. It was wonderful. It was a secret. It meant I was not allowed to get involved. So I couldn't plan anything. I knew what was happening, but it meant I couldn't plan anything. So you had to do all the planning. And poor old Burr, all the plans you made, and just driving yourself crazy, getting yourself tired. It's much easier when you don't have to make any plans. You just let things happen. Because you don't make any plans, no one can blame me if it goes wrong. Not my fault. But I asked Burr, she made the plans. But if you make the plans, you're responsible. You stuff up. So, you see, when you're not afraid of the future, it's much easier. So let go of all this fear which makes you worry so much about what might happen or what will go wrong. Look, if you are worried, at least what's going to go right. Think what's going to go right in the future instead of what's going to go wrong. That's just like not collecting the shit in the future, but collecting the future eggs. So all the things which might go right in the future. Yeah, maybe you may be sort of stupid and ridiculous and it will never happen, but at least you're happy right now. Thinking of all the times. Think of the time you're going to win the lottery. Think of the time when my brother's football, we used to go watch this football team that actually was Fulham. In the Premier League now, that's actually one of the reasons I became a monk, Tony, because all the suffering every time they lost. I think, Tony, the time when Fulham are going to beat Manchester United and win the they did. My goodness. Maybe I don't need to be a monk anymore. Sorry? 3-0, my goodness. What happened? Was that the reserves? Okay. Anyway, you can think of all the... Let's see, he remembers all the beautiful memories. How many times did they lose? Forget about what times they lost. So when you remember all the beautiful memories and the happy memories, even of the future, instead of thinking, oh, they're going to lose, oh, we're going to do terrible, oh, everything's going to go wrong. Of course, no. Who knows what's going to happen, but what you do know, if you feel negative about the future like that, you're suffering right now. That is certain. If you think, they're going to win, they're going to sort of win the premiership, they're going to be European champions, they're going to be whatever. At least you feel happy now. And who knows what happens? The future is uncertain. The soccer ball is round. It can go any way. Who knows? So whatever happens, that's why we keep a positive. If you're going to think of the future, positive about the future. Who knows? It might work. And if it doesn't work, you've had a good time thinking about it's going to work. So all the worry about, let go of the worry of the future. Let go of the future for goodness sake. And then you can enjoy the present moment. And the biggest and deepest thing about the future is actually that's where the big enemy in Buddhism, craving, that's when it lies. What is craving for? Craving for something in the future. And one of the little sayings in that book, I'm glad it's in there, a very powerful saying, whenever you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. That's a wonderful saying. Simple, but that's as profound and deeply Buddhist as you can get. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. And how much of our life is wanting something more? Wanting something in the future? Wanting to get something else? And every time you do that, you can't enjoy what you already have. Here, you're on retreat. You're on holiday. The time in Jhana Grove is going to go pretty quickly. So just enjoy, squeeze every piece of juice out of this center while you're here. Just want to be here and forget about what's going to happen tomorrow. How many of you got your bags packed? If you haven't, well done. Don't pack your bags till half an hour before you have to leave. You know, sometimes people, as soon as they get here, they unpack their bags. And the day before they leave, they already start packing the bags back up again. You haven't left yet. It's the trouble. We live so far in the future, we can't enjoy the present. We're so worried about what might happen. We're missing out on life right now. So, craving, the cause of suffering in traditional Buddhist teachings. Craving is always about something in the future. Wanting something more, wanting something else. You know, when you get it, it doesn't really satisfy you. You just want something more still. And sometimes you read in the newspapers about some of these refugees, and all I want is a peaceful place. All I want is to get rid of my cancer. All I want, it's not all you want. As soon as you get that, you want something more. So your whole life is always wanting more, wanting more, wanting more. And you keep on going on like that without any peace and satisfaction and happiness. It's okay to strive to make a better world, to do well for your family. But please spend time pausing. Spend moments, days, retreats where you say to yourself, for these 2 days, I'm not going to want anything more. I'm going to enjoy what I already have. When I go back to work, then I'm going to want something more. Then I'm going to do something. But now, I don't want anything more. Even when you meditate, I don't want anything more. Because when you want something more, you can't enjoy this moment. Let go of the wanting, and all of the meditation comes together. You enjoy this moment, mindful, in the present moment, content, pity, sukha, joy, bliss, all comes. When you want something more, you're not meditating. Even if you want jhanas, beautiful lights, bliss, enlightenment, if you want something more, you can't get any joy or pity, sukha in this moment. So, understand, letting go of future, letting go of past, especially letting go of wanting. Anger and ill will, that's about the past. If you let go of the past, how can you be angry? How can you have guilt? It's all gone. Let go of the future,
How can you have fear? How can you have wanting or craving? Imagine what it's like. You're just here, not wanting anything, content. You're not creating the future. You're not creating the past. You're just here. Peace at last. That's what we call letting go. Letting be. No future, no past, just here. Content, happy, at peace.
That's called meditation. That's called freedom. That's called liberation. That's what we're here for. At least spend many hours of your life. You've all worked really hard. Incredibly hard. Too hard. But well done. You've achieved a lot. Can't you rest and enjoy it? At least for a few moments. Or your meditation. You've done enough already. Enjoy it. Enjoy my stupid mind. I'm not going to want anything else, just my beautiful, stupid mind. And if you're content with your stupid mind, that's an enlightened mind. The enlightenment is happy to be here. Content, peace at last, not wanting anything else in the whole world, just being here, wherever that happens to be. That is called letting go. So it's simple, it's easy. So, you're going to be enlightened before you go back to Singapore. So if you really do, you're going to Dhammasarata Monastery tomorrow, aren't you? So many of you can stay there, shave off your hair and become bhikkhunis. The men, you can stay here and I'll ordain you as monks. Enlightened, free. What do you want to go back for? So anyway, see what happens. Okay, so that's the talk on letting go tonight. Totally unplanned, as usual. Hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, it's even better, because you won't invite me back again. I can have a peaceful time. Whatever happens. So anyway, I hope you had a good time. Any questions, comments, or complaints? How's the time going? 8:30. What time do you normally go to bed in Singapore? Unfortunately, you can't go out for supper. This is not Singapore. You know that? This is to tell the people from Malaysia this. I think you know this. When we went to Malacca, I was giving a... You know that... Sekinin, yeah. That's right, yeah. And I think the second day of the conference, I think you'd already left, Victor. I think the announcer made this... MC told a story about all these visitors from Singapore that they had to climb into the temple at night because the gate was locked. Climb over the wall. They said, how come? Because after the talk had finished, instead of just going back to meditate and have some sleep, they all went out for supper. Now you were involved as well. It's late at night. I don't know what time, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, climbing into the temple. Good job. Good job the media, the newspapers weren't there. Because you like eating in the evening. So it must be a lot of suffering for you being here, because there's no hawker stalls. All the in Australia, the restaurants actually close. I don't think, did the restaurants actually close in Singapore and Malacca? They're open all night. Probably are, anyway. There's always something which is open, but not here, I'm afraid. So you're stuffed. You have to meditate or go to sleep. So anyway, have a nice night tonight. You can always have something to... Some snacks in the room. I'm sure there's something in there. Instant noodles, anything. When you're when you're desperate, anything. Okay, any questions or comments? Okay, well, I'll let you meditate then, and I'll go off and meditate back in Jhana Grove. Is that okay? Okay, you have a nice, quiet time. And what else is going on? Tomorrow morning, what time are the first people leaving? 8 o'clock, okay. I'll try and come over just about 7:30, just to see you off the premises. Respect. And Yeah, and my brother and Pat is going off about the same time, or roughly? Yeah, 9 o'clock anyway. I'll just see you off as well. So I'll be over here about 7:30. Any comments, questions? Yeah? What have you got here? Uh-oh. Nah. That's not Bodhi Nyana, that's the Anagarikas. Yeah, we don't need the eggs, do we need the eggs? Okay, yeah. Sada, 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 okay. Yeah, sure. Because you can see just one of the wonderful things about you coming here, just see how well we're supported. And so, you know, you come over here and just how many people look after you. And that's really warms my heart up, because after all these years of teaching and talking and getting people to be Buddhists and practicing, it's not just about the theory of being some intellectual or ritual. It's the best ritual. It's not just the toilet paper serving I was talking about. It's just kindness. Looking after one another and sharing. You can get some more eggs somewhere else some other time. There's still many chickens left in Australia. I'm sure they'll work a little bit harder with compassion. Actually, that's actually true, that there was another, a Sagara Mudra temple. They got their headquarters in Geylang. Remember that old temple we law? Yeah, but Sagara Mudra was just up the road from where the old BF was. And they've got a temple over here in north of Perth. And when they were trying to get permission from the local council, which was like a country shire to the north of Perth, and the councillors, the one who make decisions, you can build or you can't build, mostly farmers. And so at first they were very concerned about a Buddhist monastery in this area. Did it really fit? And so the monks asked me to go along, to a meeting with the councillors. And so I went there and I told a story, which was actually I got from a scientific journal from Taiwan. They'd done some experiments on Buddhist chanting. And they had found, and this was scientifically proved, I think it was a duck lays an egg every 5 days on average. But when they played Buddhist chanting to the ducks laid an egg every 3 days. It was true. The proof was there in Science Journal. So I told the council, I said, look, if you have Buddhist monks in your neighborhood, the productivity of your egg farms and your cows and everything else will go up. And of course, they saw the funny side of it. They started laughing, but they actually gave the Buddha permission. Because what they really wanted to see is that, these Buddhists, they're just ordinary people who have a sense of humor. They're not religious nuts. And in Australia, that meant an awful lot to those people. So, these Buddhists are okay. They tell jokes. And that gave them permission. But it's actually true. If you have chanting, I told that story once at one of the katinas here. And we had this was the local shire. She was the chief executive officer of the shire. So a very important person. She came here. She listened to the chanting. She comes every year to our katina ceremony. And the next time she came with a baby. And I said, see, chanting worked. So that makes the cows are like coming every year. Maybe not for the ceremony, for the food and for the jokes. So we get plenty more eggs. We do lots of chanting. Any other comments or questions? Okay, so have a nice night if you want to have an early night, because in Singapore you just can't get enough sleep and rest in Malaysia, so get a bit extra while you're here. Okay. So